From 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR, this is Lake Effect. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. Today, we'll hear from a group of voters with different views and experiences about how they're feeling about the presidential election.
If I had to vote today, for one, it would definitely be a vote of the lesser of two evils.
Interested in researching your family history? We'll tell you how the Milwaukee Public Library and the Milwaukee County Genealogical Society can help.
This is our home. We've been here a long time. We have an office area in the back and where we keep files and various things. So it's just always been a big part of doing genealogy to come to the library.
Plus, we'll tell you about a book filled with images of Milwaukee taken throughout the mid-1900s. All that's coming up on Lake Effect, but first, here are today's headlines. This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. Thanks for joining us. Today, we'll hear from five Wisconsin voters about how they're feeling about this year's presidential election and what they want for our country over the next 4 years. As part of WUWM's election coverage, we wanted to understand how Wisconsin voters are feeling and dig deeper into what Wisconsinites, not politicians, are thinking ahead of the election. This week, we hosted a roundtable discussion with five people from different political views and experiences so we could learn from them and they could learn from each other. It was moderated by myself and WUWM's Mayon Silver. This is the first part of that conversation, and we'd like to note that you'll be hearing people express their own opinions, not those of WUWM.
The first question we'd like to ask you is to introduce yourselves, your name, what you do, and in one word, how are you feeling about this presidential election?
Okay, my name is Jody, and I'm a manager at a retail garden center. I do landscaping. I was a former teacher. I taught for over 30 years. And I guess the number one word would be nervous.
My name is John. I'm a lawyer. I married, have two kids and two grandchildren. And the one word I would use is disgusted.
Bonjour, Nadawe Benazi, Indigenous, Miendodem, Marin Denning. I am a educator, and I'm excited about this election. I think there's a real clear choice, and I think that means good things.
My name is Gray O'Leary-Hasmonic. I am a master's student studying human resources and labor relations at UW-Milwaukee. I also got my undergraduate degree in education and ESL there, so I'm an educator like Jody as well. And I am feeling mixed feelings about the election, but I think it will go strongly one way rather than another. So I think I understand where it's headed, at least from my perspective.
My name is Tracy. I am a paralegal. I work for Milwaukee County. I just finished my first year of law school. How am I feeling about the election? I am feeling that I don't have much of an option. Like, my options have been severely restricted.
Thank you all for that. So we're going to dive deeper into these one-word feelings and initial thoughts. So I'm going to open this to whoever wants to start. Please raise your hand. Tell us something about your life or experiences that influences how you're viewing this election.
We can start with Tracy.
Well, I'm a Black woman who navigates the world, obviously, as a Black woman. A lot of the issues the issues that we're facing as a country is magnified from the vantage point of being a minority and a woman. And not only that, a minority and a woman with Black sons. And so I'm feeling that we're at a crossroads of trauma that we'll have to navigate in a way that will offer some comfort to people of my community.
Anyone else want to go next to share something about your life and experiences that influence how you view politics? Jody?
Really brought my issue close to home is when a dear friend of mine who's a pastor in the very poor Appalachia area of Tennessee, when Trump okayed the coal companies to dump raw coal slag into the rivers and lakes, they lost their entire supply of drinking water. All their fish died. Everything that they used to support their lifestyle was gone. And she was absolutely devastated, and so were the people that she works with in her church.
Gray, would you like to speak?
Yeah, sure. So I voted for Biden in 2020, and I have changed a lot politically during that time. If you asked me 10 years ago where I was at, I would tell you that I was a socialist and an atheist, and I am not anymore today. I consider myself a Christian and a libertarian conservative, so I've had a very big turnaround in the last 4 years, especially being 23, and that was the first presidential election I voted for. So it's an interesting time to be alive.
Thank you, John.
Till somewhere around age 50, I was a very steadfast Republican, but I consider myself a Reagan Republican. In 2016, things changed, and I haven't really changed my view of the world. Everybody moderates and changes a little bit as time goes on. But to paraphrase Reagan, I haven't left the Republican Party. The Republican Party left me. And I think at this point, I'm neither a Republican nor a Democrat. As I said before, I'm disgusted.
Maren, would you like to weigh in?
Building on what was said, you know, the disgusting part is, you know, I feel excited in some ways. I feel alone on that. But I remember coming to Milwaukee. I'm native, was born on Menominee Reservation. And my mom came to Milwaukee on an Indian relocation program, government sponsored. And when I came in, I lived at Northland Housing Project. So I saw what politics could do. And she was an incredible woman, incredibly smart, incisive, amazing. And I was so lucky to be her son. And she met someone she fell in love with very much, who was a Republican opposite of her. And every election cycle, it was like the end of the world in our house. There were raging debates and conversations, and sometimes dinner was served and sometimes it wasn't, depending on who was cooking. And I just remember each of them taking me to an election booth. And back then they had booths with a little drape and it would go around you. And it was like a moment I could be with them. And I knew they were voting differently, but I was with each of them every time. And that really imprinted into me an idea that we're just one person. And for me, as a group, we're only 2%, meaning Native people, of the population. And in a democracy, we're often run over or not often heard, because if you're 2%, how can we be any measurable majority or minority? But it is an interesting place to see things.
So just to dive into this a little bit more, Gray, if you're willing to share, you mentioned it was a span of 4 years. You went from one end of the spectrum to the other. What were some life events or what influenced you to you know, be introspective and to make this shift?
I think the pandemic is really, it gave me a lot of time to think. And I had a really weird, quite literally, a come to Jesus moment where I really just woke up one morning and I realized, like, hey, I'm just reading CNN and taking that, like, really, like, as the end all to be all. And, like, I am not thinking critically at all. So I decided to make myself really uncomfortable, and I started listening to a lot of the folks over at the Daily Wire and was yelling at the radio for about a month. And then I took an econ class. I took another econ class. I took a stats class, continued to study, and I realized I couldn't defend any of my views. And so I, rather humbly, with my tail between my legs, kind of had to have that awakening and that reckoning that I was not as correct as I thought I was when I was 21 or 20 even, so.
And Tracy, could you tell us a little bit more about specifically what concerns you about the election? You were talking, you've talked to me earlier about racial justice. You've talked to me about police brutality in Black and brown communities. Is there something in this 2024 election that's standing out to you?
Well, there's a candidate who says things like he doesn't want certain people to come from blank hole countries. Well, those people look like me. We have a certain candidate running, Trump, who says things like, you know, there are good people on both sides when it comes down to fighting for justice in the streets, and where people like me are being run over and killed are people who look like me and people who look like my children and my mother and my father and my uncle. And it's very hard for me to get on board with this election when I can't figure out how one side can reconcile the things that our commander in chief is saying as the leader of a nation that I'm a part of, but not only a nation that I'm a part of, but a nation that my ancestors quite literally built with their sweat and their hands and their tears. And so navigating this political arena right now for me is, one, am I even being seen? And two, when is it my turn to be seen? Because I know what I represent to you, because you've said it. And I appreciate that you've said it outwardly, but I know what you think of me. And yet you represent me not only in these United States, but the world.
Well, and all of you, we've had conversations before this roundtable, and there are places where you're all sort of torn and think that there's areas where you might think different political viewpoints might fit me a little better. You know, Tracy, you've mentioned you're also kind of against bureaucracy and red tape. And
absolutely,
you feel that former President Trump did some of that.
Absolutely.
And so we'll talk about that. But we'll get into this question right here, which is, if you had to vote today for president, who would you vote for and why? And if you're undecided, could you say why? And we'll start with John.
I'm going to vote for Nikki Haley because I believe that, one, she's the right age. Two, I think she better reflects to some degree my beliefs, although I think she was, for too long, was unwilling to say what she thought about Trump. But when the general election comes, it's a hard choice for me to make, but I will end up voting for President Biden, not because I agree with his policies. I don't agree with any of his policies, or very few of them, but because I believe Mr. Trump is not fit to be commander-in-chief of this country. And for some of the reasons that Tracy said, the way he treats people generally, the way he refers to people, his beliefs about people who have different religions, his misogyny, but also some of his policies. I think the world is a less safe place with a president who doesn't believe in NATO and who doesn't believe that Putin is a danger to the world and doesn't want to stick up for our allies. So it's not a vote for Joe Biden. It's a vote against Donald Trump.
Thank you, John. Who, anyone like to go next? Jody?
Well, to me, the most critical issue in this election, and always, is the health of the planet. Very simply, clean air, clean water, preservation of all species. And we live in this amazing, beautiful planet with incredible biodiversity. And we treat it like a garbage can. We poison the very things that we need to live. We poison the air. We poison the water. We've killed off millions of species. It is unconscionable to think that we should pollute our air, even one iota, or pollute our drinking water. And we do it every day. And I think we really need to open our eyes if this is going to turn around. And so I would vote for Biden simply because I have to vote for the Earth. I could go on, but I'll let somebody else speak.
Biden.
But that's
yeah.
my passion. So that's
you,
how
Jody.
I vote.
Anyone else like to go next?
I'll go. It's always an interesting question for me of who does a person vote for? To me, the more interesting conversation is who do we vote for? Because I look at my own family history with the United States government as a Native person, and it is complex and it is tragic. And there are also some good moments in there. I could say that as a country and as a people and as folks out there who vote, I had a grandfather who stepped in when my father was killed and helped raise me. And he never shared that he went to an industrial school, a boarding school, that he was sent there by the United States government. He never shared that he had a sister there. He never shared that she died there and she was younger than him. He never talked about it in his life. It was because people in our family cared enough to look into the past. And that past revealed something very ugly about this country. So when I look at how I vote, I'm less interested in that, again, and more interested how others people vote, because how we are as a country is reflected in our vote. What is it that we are about? What is it? It's such an individualistic piece to ask the question, who will you vote for? It's like that's just one person, but who is it that we hold up to be a person that represents us all together, not just one party or another, but all of us? And it is complicated for Native people because we have voices that are conservative and in between and who are liberal and for all very good reasons. And we are equally concerned about the earth. We are equally concerned about our children. And we're equally concerned about the ones who came before us. And the ones who came before us, that is a challenged history. And it can go back to liberal policies by liberal presidents that helped us with housing and now looking at upgrades in mental health. But we can also look on the Republican side and say one of the largest ranging studies that helped change Indian country was from the Republican Party, an act that's so important to Indian country in Wisconsin was helped through by Republicans and a Republican governor. It's called Act 31, which mandates the instruction of Native American people. So for me, the question, again, it's not about who I vote for. It's who we vote for.
So just to belabor the point a little bit, would you share who you personally, I know your point is that we're a collective and we're a community, but in terms of your individual decision making?
I'd have to say it's less about politics and more about what it is to be a person in this life. And the person who speaks to me is Joe Biden. As somebody who has lost a son, it colors a person in how we move and how we decide things for families and people. And sometimes that can go into very angry places, or it can be into places that build our character and have us respond in very positive ways. And so it's not for a policy, it's not for what things are about, but who that is as a person and how they treat the people they love, and even just as importantly, the people they may not know and what they want for them.
Gray, would you like to weigh in?
Sure. So some of the biggest issues to me, the economy is huge for me. Being 23, the age that I'm at, looking to move now and settle down, put some roots down, get my first big girl job, and just looking at the price of things that I used to not think about at all, even when I was buying them for myself. Also, as an educator, seeing the way that public school has changed is scary. I went to a private Christian school, first through fifth grade, homeschooled for middle school, public school for high school. So I've kind of seen the whole spectrum there. And just how different the experience of teaching was versus my experience as a student, and not only how I was teaching, but what I was having to teach, teaching CRT, teaching that me being the oppressor in a room full of minority students. And having graduated 2 years ago, I kind of missed the curve on this, but now telling students that they're born in the wrong body, that they should transition behind their parents' back, things that I find highly immoral and things that I find stray from the very core values of our country, things that we were built upon, things that are time-tested and true, and things that I don't think waver with time. And I think a deviation from those values has accelerated our downfall in precipitous ways. And although both candidates are imperfect, morally, if not in other ways, I will be voting for Trump, although he's not ideal. Neither is Biden. I'm a Vivek girl through and through. Trump is not good on the Second Amendment. Very important to me as a woman living in Milwaukee. So Trump he's got my vote. But obviously, if we had someone younger with better views, that would be ideal. But we don't.
And Tracy, would you like to weigh in?
I would. For me, it's difficult, as it is for all of us. But when I look at it, I simply see a choice between one old white guy and another older white guy. It's not very representative, but then you look at both candidates. I will be honest, because that's what we're here for. Biden has there is a troubled relationship with, you know, his policies and some of the bills that he's brought forward with regards to the incarceration of brown and black people, you know, in his history as being senator. And then we have a stated racist, you know, on the ballot too, both who have caused harm to my community. If I had to vote today, for one, it would definitely be a vote of the lesser of two evils. The reason that I would be voting is because, again, people who look like me have died, shed blood in the streets just to be able to vote. So I feel like I'm voting more out of obligation and more out of just a gratefulness and a thankfulness for those who paved the way for me to be able to vote as a Black person and as a woman, as opposed to where I want to see the country go. I do not believe that in my lifetime I will see it get better for me, because it seems like the strides that I had seen made, even if I wasn't quite old enough to understand how large those strides were, are progressively being peeled back. So we're going backwards. But I vote Biden for the hopes that if not for my children, then my grandchildren will have a better way. And obviously, I've got it better than my mother. I've definitely got it better than my grandparents. But we're still working in the red, right? We're still working in the red as a community. So if that is my vote, then it's the older white guy, unfortunately.
That was a portion of WUWM's first voter roundtable, which included John Wirth, Gray O'Leary-Hosmonic, Jody Kaler, Maren Webster-Denning, and Tracy Davis. There's more to come in part two of this conversation, which you'll hear on Monday's Lake Effect. You can have a say in our 2024 election coverage by filling out our election survey. You can find a link at WUWM.com. What you tell us will help inform the stories you hear on Lake Effect and WUWM. In about 15 minutes, we'll tell you about a book filled with images of Milwaukee taken throughout the mid-1900s. But first, we'll take a trip to Central Library to learn about a partnership that can help you look into your own family history. That's coming up on Lake Effect on 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. You're listening to Lake Effect on 89.7 WUWM. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. The library is more than just books. Every month, the Milwaukee Public Library joins Lake Effect to share resources, book recommendations, and cool stuff you just might not know about. This month, we're digging into genealogy, the study of ancestry and family histories. Now, of course, there are resources like Ancestry.com and 23andMe, but the Milwaukee Public Library system has always been a place to find resources and records about local histories. And if you're interested in learning more about your family history, like me, the library and the Milwaukee County Genealogical Society is a great place to start with many free resources. To learn more, I went to Central Library's Frank P. Zeiler Humanities Room downtown to meet with Karen Jagan from the Genealogical Society and Kirsten Thompson, the Library Services Manager for Arts and Humanities. Thompson begins by explaining what research materials the library has developed for more than a century. Kirsten Thompson and Karen Jagan, welcome to Lake Effect. Thank you both so much for joining me at the library today.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Yes, thanks.
So we are in the Frank P. Zeiler Humanities Room at Central Library downtown, where there is a massive collection of materials, resources related to family histories. Has keeping these kind of records always been a part of MPL from the start? There's so many decades and centuries even that go back. So when was it a mission of the library to build this?
Absolutely. So this has been a mission of Milwaukee Public Library since the very beginning. The library just celebrated 125 years, and we have definitely been collecting local history topics ever since then. So some of the things we have here include city directories, maps. Definitely we collect lots of print material. So back in the day when you were doing genealogical research, you were often going to print sources like family lineages. The Daughters of the American Revolution would do things like that. Census records used to all also be print, and we have a collection of that as well. But a lot of research is done online these days, and the Milwaukee County Genealogical Society has been a longtime supporter in promoting digital access. They used to actually pay for our subscription to Ancestry.com. Now we have an institutional subscription to that, and so fortunately we don't have to pay that fee anymore. But the Society was always really proactive in making sure those resources were available for all Milwaukeeans.
So Karen, you are involved with the Milwaukee County Genealogical Society. What does this group do and what drove you to get involved personally?
Well, the main thing we do is teach the public about genealogy. That's part of our mission statement. And we have free classes 10 months out of the year, once a month. We also have a speaker every month, something genealogy related. We do Ask a Genealogy sessions at various libraries around Milwaukee where the public can come in and sit with us one-on-one. So our main goal is to promote genealogy and help people do it.
Can either one of you go into a bit more detail about the partnership between the two of your organizations and how you work together, how it's improved both of your mission statements, and anything that you want to share about the partnership?
I'll start with our society has been around since 1935. And of course, you needed the library to look things up because there were no computers, of course. So we've been here. This is our home. We've been here a long time. We have an office area in the back and where we keep files and various things. So it's just always been a big part of doing genealogy to come to the library.
The classes that Karen just mentioned happen once a month, and usually the first one in January is specifically about the library's resources. So one of the librarians here in the Arts and Humanities group does the presentation and just talks about the resources we have. Of course, I also mentioned the partnership where they were actually funding Ancestry.com and also, like I said, making sure that all the public had access to it. So a stipulation that they had was that a library card wasn't required, so that it would just be available to anybody who walked in. And these drop-in sessions are just a new variation on that. So, you know, in today's environment, I think library programs in general are moving away from the person in the front giving a talk, kind of providing a lecture, and more helping people just kind of go from where they are in their own research. And we also recognize that people don't always necessarily want to come to Central Library. They might want to be able to do this in a library that's nearer to their home. So this has been a really great partnership. We've been taking full advantage of the full Milwaukee Public Library system, moving these all around the city, north side, south side, downtown, east side, west side, so that people really have access. We really just want to encourage people to be able to participate.
Now, something like researching your genealogy, your family history, can be intimidating for many people, especially if like, hey, I only know like this little bit about something, and maybe people assume this isn't enough to go off of, right? So how do you suggest people start this process?
You always start with yourself, and you write down everything you know, and your birthday, where you were born, all that good stuff, your parents, grandparents, siblings. Start with yourself and work backwards. Don't jump into some because they have the same name and think that they're related to you. You start with yourself, your parents, your grandparents, and then we go, usually people start with the censuses because they are readily available. They're here at the library. They're free to look at. They're also free online at familysearch.org, and they're a really good, you know, starting place.
Now, Milwaukee is certainly made a city of immigrants, and there are even specific genealogies if you, say, want to research Polish heritage, Mexican, anything of that sort, right? What kind of resources are available if people want to dive specifically into a certain group?
Well, like I said, you start with the censuses. Mm-hmm. And we, in our group, we have various interest groups that meet on Polish. We have African-American interest group, a Czech interest group, Italian, Polish, and a Mexican area interest group. So, and we always have different speakers where you can find, and you can look at our website and find out who's talking where and what's going on.
So speaking of Polish research, you were kind enough to do some preliminary research into my family on the Nowakowski side, and I know it must be a pretty common Polish name because people always ask me, are you related to this Nowakowski? How about this one? And it's like, sorry, no.
I had a hard time getting started on it. But once I figured, okay, this is really the right one, you know, it's hard to figure that you have the right family.
Yeah, so I'm so excited to kind of dive into what you found. And, you know, I'll admit, I didn't know if the information I gave you was enough. I asked my dad, I was like, hey, what do you remember? What do you know? So I had like, his parents' names, their parents, kind of where they lived, what year they were born, some service in World War II, stuff that I was like, well, this is something, but not sure how much. So can you just walk me through how you narrowed it down, where you started, and some of what you found?
Sure. I started with the censuses and what you gave me. And your great-grandparents were George John, George, yeah, George J., John George John Nowakowski, and Helen. Yeah. So I found her, and I found your dad with them. You know, the 1950 census, you cannot get anything sooner. Mm. The census has a 72-year waiting period, because they don't want people to be looking up living people.
Okay.
For security. So they don't release them until they're 72 years old. So the last one we got was in 2022, and it was the 1950 census. So that's where I had to start.
Okay.
Then I even found a census that had your grandparents and the great-grandparents, you know, living in the same household. And so then you know, okay, this is the right, you know, you got the right people.
Yeah.
Before that was, I think it's pronounced Marjan.
Yeah, M-A-R-J-A-N.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Some censuses like skip the J and they dot the I, it's like an I, it looks like Marjan.
Mm-hmm.
And then Marciana, which I thought was so pretty.
I like that name. Yeah. I've never seen that before.
Yeah, Marciana was her name. And they both came here from Poland,
mm-hmm.
and they got married. They came in 1893, not together, and they got married in 1893.
So you wonder that whole backstory.
Well, actually, yeah, one of the census said 1893. I think one said 1892. I did not find the immigration manifest mm-hmm. from the ship, so I'm not exactly sure of the year they came, but yeah. Around 1893.
Yeah, and that just makes you wonder about that story right there. It's like, yeah. Okay, they didn't come together, but then married within a year.
Yeah.
So what happened there? And it looks like you said you also found a marriage certificate, right?
I did. I found a marriage certificate for Marjan and Marciana.
Oh, this is so cool.
And they married in Milwaukee in 1893. And what's cool about this is that it has their parents' names, both of them.
So that's an additional way we can find
out. Yes. I mean, I don't know where they, it does not have a city. That's always a big thing to find, to try to find the town. But yeah. If you, this is the priest. It's a Roman Catholic church. I would look for this priest. Actually, I think it says he lives at 10th and Beecher in Milwaukee.
Oh,
so
cool.
You could probably find out what church was there.
It was probably nearby.
And
parsonage.
Religious records more often have more information. So many times the church records will have where they were from, what town they were from.
Okay. Well, and there's so many churches here in Milwaukee from all the immigrants. I wouldn't have assumed to look at a church record, you know, in addition to what's here at the library.
Yeah, and I didn't find any online. I was happy to find this. But I think that's what I would do. If you want to take it back to Poland, and you can start looking for Polish records in Poland. But you have to know a town.
This is so cool. you also found a grave here.
Yes.
I will definitely go and find this in person, too.
Yeah.
And that can be a whole nother journey for me, and I'll take my dad along.
It's all written in Polish.
What cemetery is this?
It is in St. Adalbert Cemetery.
Oh, okay.
Sure. Which is a Polish cemetery, yes. I believe. I think it used to be called like Polish Cemetery or something. Yeah.
Oddly enough, I live right by this place.
Oh,
so I've unknowingly been near my great-great-grandparents.
So cool to see in person.
Oh, yes.
Wow.
This is amazing. So this is just like, again, as I said, like, I didn't think I had a ton to go off of, but already, like, you're presenting so much more than I would have ever expected. And this is like such a cool experience for me just to get these stepping stones and start this journey.
I found the 1900 census, the 1910, 1920, 1930. And I think for some reason I didn't get the 40, but I have the 50. So you'll have to look at all that.
Okay. Yeah. So, you know, this is just one example here today with me looking into my family, and you both have led workshops and helped people look into their own family history, do either of you want to share a memory that stands out to you of leading these workshops and helping people find their roots here in Milwaukee?
I can share something since we're talking about cemeteries. At the Tippecanoe Library, a lady said her and her siblings, her parents had passed away. They did not know where their grandma was buried. Mm. So this was so important to her to find her grandmother. And she didn't know about Find a Grave is a free site. Anybody can go on it at home. So we punched in the names, and this lady was crying. It was in St. Francis, and we were right down the street from it, you know. So she's like, I'm going there right now.
Like that immediate, like, this is my action. I can do this now. I found this information.
Yeah, and
That's
it was
amazing.
Raining. She didn't care.
Keep going. How about for you, Kirsten? What do you enjoy about this work?
Well, I really got started doing genealogy by doing my own family research. So as a kid, you know, in the 80s, just listening to family members at family reunions and things like that. But one thing I would let people know is that even though you may have already looked for somebody, if it's been a while, look again, because new records are always being digitized and you might find something new. One of the people I've been looking for recently is my great-grandfather. He's an African-American man who left Georgia to serve during World War I. He served in Europe. And just recently, I found a list of all the people on the ship coming back from Europe to America.
Wow.
Right at the end of the war in 1919.
Cool. Mm-hmm. That's amazing. So I want to thank you both so much, Kirsten and Karen, for sharing more today, for looking into my own family. This is amazing. I can't wait to share it with my parents. And yeah, just thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you for having us.
Absolutely. You're very welcome.
Kirsten Thompson is the Library Services Manager for Arts and Humanities at Milwaukee Public Library. And Karen Jagan is a member of the Milwaukee County Genealogical Society and the co-editor for their newsletter. We spoke at Central Library, and if you're interested in researching your family history, there's an Ask a Genealogist presentation on April 6th at the Good Hope Library. We'll take one more break, and then we'll learn about a book that shares images of what life was like in Milwaukee from the mid-1900s, taken by everyday photographers. That's next on Lake Effect on 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. This is Like Effect on 89.7 WUWM. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. Since 2016, Adam Levin has been collecting images of mid-century Milwaukee from estate sales, donations, and even eBay. Altogether, these images create a catalog that documents Milwaukee life through the lens of everyday people. Last summer, his collection was released in the form of Kodachrome Milwaukee, a book of about 150 images documenting decades-old festivals, Bucks games, house parties, and more. Levin joins Lake Effect Sam Woods to share how he found these images and what the project means to him.
Before we get into what's in the book itself, what does Kodachrome mean? Like, what does the word mean?
Kodachrome is the brand name for a color reversal film introduced by Eastman Kodak in 1935. It was one of the first successful color materials and was used for both cinematography and still photography. And for many years, Kodachrome was widely used for professional color photography, especially for images intended for publication in print.
So in other words, this is kind of a type of film used for old photographs that now would live on slides that you had to, that were usually living in someone's basement or
right.
or in a historical society or library or something and mm-hmm. collecting dust, and you
yep.
had to kind of digitize them for this book.
Correct. I have found these images at estate sales, donations from families who, for whatever reason, did not want the slides anymore. I found some images on eBay too. And what fascinates me is these images have been sitting around for decades and nobody's been able to see them for whatever reason. Some people don't have the time or want to purchase the technology to digitize them. Mm-hmm. It's a hobby of mine. I actually have two scanners. I mean, that's how hardcore I am into it. But the families who donate these slides to me, I offer to digitize them and put them on a flash drive so they can have a copy. If they're going to give them to me, the least I can do is scan them and give them a flash drive so they can see these images.
Yeah.
I wanted to put 200 images in this book, but the publisher's limit was 150, so I had to cut that down.
Yeah. Well, let's get into what is in the book. So I know when I was looking through it, there's images that someone today living in Milwaukee might recognize or of events that someone living in Milwaukee might recognize, like Brady Street Festival, German Fest, a Bucks game. But there's also images of things like basement parties and just right. kind of like people shooting pool, right?
Yeah.
But can you talk a little bit about what's in this book?
Sure. I mean, there's random chapters. There are 15 chapters in all. We have a photographer that roamed the streets of Milwaukee back in from the 40s till the early 90s. His name is Ray Chopra Ray. And that's the first chapter. Then I have State Fair, Parks, Speedway, Brady Street, German Fest, basement parties, as you mentioned, downtown parades, the Milwaukee Arena before it became the Mecca. There's a couple Bucks game slides in there from, I want to say 1970 to 72. Mm-hmm. We have the domes, aerial views of downtown from the 1950s. I have just one chapter that's just random images of Milwaukee. Mayfair Mall's Ice Chalet, which was in existence from 1973 till 1986. Capitol Court, which no longer exists. And the last chapter is about County Stadium in the 1950s. So there's a lot of
stuff.
Random images here. Again, I could have easily done 200, but that just wasn't going to happen.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. In addition to having a bunch of different types of events, as you mentioned, that are here, there's a bunch of different people just doing kind of random everyday things, right? So you mentioned basement parties and shooting pool, but then also just, you know, someone like having a cigarette in their car or something, mm-hmm. or just like, you know, walking around at a parade. And I know we were talking about before that you have you've had a long interest in history yourself, and so those mm-hmm. kinds of, when you see an image of someone sitting in the park, for example, you're kind of wondering like, okay, what was their day like? What brought brought them to that? To that point. But you mentioned Ray Chopra was one of the photographers that we do know of. And a lot of these were just unknown photographers. But what do we know about these photographers in general and the types of lives that they lived and their interests and all that?
Ray was the only photographer in this book that roamed the streets on a daily basis and took photos. Today, everybody does that. But back in the 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, and part of the 80s, people didn't really just roam Wisconsin Avenue and take photos. But to me, it's an art. It's just, it's way of seeing downtown in a way that is completely different from today. The other images are family slides. Of random places that the family went to, and they were not professional. They were just doing it for fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You've mentioned that there was a number of images that did not make it into the book. I think you said you wanted to put in 200. Can you talk about the images that maybe that you wanted to have in the book but didn't make it?
Again, they're just random images that could have fit in some of these chapters, but some of the reasons that they didn't make the book is because of the size, and with the publisher, it didn't work. with them. And I was a little concerned that they kept cutting photos that I wanted in the book. I have to have that one in there, I'm thinking to myself. So it was like trying to choose, you know, who's your favorite. But finally, you know, I just had to get it down to 150. So, yeah, I mean, I could put on a slideshow for a week, I think, with all the images I have. So.
Yeah. Well, you have an event coming up at Boswell, right, where some of those images that didn't make it into the book will see the light of day.
Yeah. The book launch is July 21st at Boswell from 6:30 to 7:30. And for the first half an hour, I'm going to talk about Kodachrome and my hobby. And the second half, I am going to show about, I'm not going to get through 200 images, but that's what I have on my flash drive. And I don't think anybody wants to sit around for that long to see 200 images. But
you were interested in those images. Maybe someone else would.
True. So I'm going to show those, and those are the images that did not make the book. So unfortunately, I cannot use a old-time projector because something could go wrong with those. They're so old.
Yeah.
I don't want to take that risk. So I would love to be there with a projector and
dim the lights
and dim the light,
have
a, like
have
they
the
did
hum
in,
of the machine.
Right, like back in the 60s and 70s, how they did that. But we're going to do this with a computer.
Shame. 21st
century.
I know,
but I can't take the risk of having something go wrong with a projector.
I want to ask you, you know, you've been collecting these images since 2016, right?
Yeah, I started really getting into it about that time, you know. You know, I like history, but I find that these images, you know, haven't seen the light of day, you know, for decades. And, you know, there's some interesting images online, but, you know, those are images that I've seen over and over, you know. Anybody can go to Pinterest. Anyone can go to the UWM site and pull photos, but I find it more of a organic way of showing these images that should be showcased.
Yeah. Well, I want to ask, while, you know, since 2016, while you've been collecting images for this book, or at least that became part of this book, what were you like reflecting on? What was going through your mind? Do you see Milwaukee in a new way? Like, you see a building that was in one of these images, and you kind of, you know, you see your image almost on that kind of present day, what you're looking at.
Does it
change your perspective at all, maybe?
To me, it's more of, oh, that was there before. Because I'm always curious, what was there before?
Yeah.
What was where we are today, you know? It just interesting to see what it used to be. And a time that I wasn't even alive yet, you know. So, and then when I do find images that are closer to when I was born in the early 70s, that fascinates me too, because I only have vague memories like anyone else who was a child, you know, of their city and their family at that time. So it fascinates me, but I don't expect everybody to feel that way. You know, nobody's required to. It's just just a hobby of mine.
Well, thank you, Adam, for sharing both your time with me today and on Lake Effect, as well as your hobby with the rest of us through this book. It's I can say that I enjoyed flipping through it, and as appreciator of history myself, it's works like these that bring that kind of history alive and make it accessible. And I just want to say I appreciate you and your time that went into this work.
Well, thank you for inviting me. I enjoyed speaking with you.
Adam Levin is a local historian and author of the book Kodachrome Milwaukee. He spoke with Lake Effect Sam Woods last summer, and there will be a slideshow presentation of Kodachrome Milwaukee at Puddler's Hall this Saturday, March 30th at 2 p.m. That's Lake Effect for today. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. Joy Powers, Sam Woods, and X-Grit Nunez join me in producing Lake Effect each week with help from Robert Larry. Becky Mortensen is our executive producer. We also heard from Mayon Silver, Lena Tran, and Chuck Kornbach from the WUWM News Team this week. Jason Reavy is our studio engineer. Michelle Maternowski is our digital manager. Valeria Navarro-Viegas is our digital editor. Trapper Shep wrote our theme music. A new season of Bubbler Talk is on the way, but ahead of that, we need some new questions from you. Submit your questions about the Milwaukee area at WUWM.com. Then listen for new episodes starting in May on Thursdays during Lake Effect and Fridays during Morning Edition. Join us again for Lake Effect Monday at noon, when we'll share what you can and can't do while you're filling out your ballot in the election booth. Thanks so much for joining us today, right here on listener-supported 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR.